It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Ashley Webster.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Jason Chaffetz, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. I'm Eben Brown. The House of Representatives steps in to try stopping a pending strike of freight rail workers, which threatens supply chains, fuel spikes, and everything else we don't need. But House Democrats didn't necessarily go along with the labor union's demands.
The political problem for the Democrats is that they are pro-labor, so they don't want to be seen as stepping on labor's toes, especially when, you know, they can't come to an agreement.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Not everything you buy is shipped around the country in diesel-powered big rig trucks. So much food, fuel, water, farming fertilizer is sent via freight train. And if those trains were to stop running, you could see prices skyrocket and supply levels drop. The U.S. House of Representatives is now stepping in to prevent a potential strike of rail workers. The federal government has given itself power to intervene in certain labor disputes, and it has done it before.
Well, let me give you some history lessons here first. So in 1926, the House of Representatives and the Senate passed the National Railway Act. And basically what they considered at the time that the railroad industry was so important to the economy of the United States that, you know, if there were to be a strike, it would devastate the economy.
Chad Pergram is our senior Capitol Hill correspondent. He's also our walking congressional history encyclopedia. He speaks to us from the Capitol building.
So they said, all right, Congress can intervene. They also gave eventually the airline industry a little bit of protection there that they could intervene as well. In 1992, this is the last time that Congress got involved. There was a 3-day strike, and the House and Senate acted pretty quickly, actually, to put out the fire there. So they can step in. The problem, the political problem for the Democrats is that they are pro-labor. So they don't want to be seen as stepping on labor's toes, especially when, you know, they can't come to an agreement. This is where you had one of the presidents of one of the rail unions the other day saying, I thought that Joe Biden was supposedly the most pro-labor president in history. But what they have done here for the time being, the House of Representatives has passed a bill that says there will be no railway strike. Now, what they did separately is they passed, and I'm not going to get into the parliamentary weeds here, but a separate legislative vehicle which gives the rail workers 7 days of paid medical leave. So that's very important. You had progressives and pro-labor members very upset about this, saying, you know, we can't intervene in these circumstances. But to, you know, give them that option, okay, they were able to vote. They can say politically, I did what I could, and then we'll send this to the United States Senate. That's where things get very thorny. The reason is because now this bill needs to get through one, if not two, rounds of what we call cloture to overcome a filibuster. You need 60 votes. And again, you know, you have some Democrats in the Senate who had the same concerns as liberals in the House of Representatives. Now, Mitch McConnell, he was part of the meeting at the White House a couple of days ago with the other, you know, congressional leaders from both sides of the aisle. He supports this. He's very concerned about the economy, what they do in transporting fertilizer and for agriculture, you know, anhydrous ammonia. You know, that's a big one as well. You know, stuff for Christmas, chlorine. For water supplies in cities, you know, they can't ship that stuff. They can't leave it sitting in rail yards. So they were going to start cutting that off this weekend. So this is why the House moved so expeditiously. The problem, though, in the Senate is getting 60 votes. And you have Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont, who wants to maybe say, OK, let's do something, you know, for the workers. Now, what they will probably do, and I asked Senator Schumer, the majority leader, this yesterday, I said, will you allow an amendment? And he was very kind of circumspect about this, whether or not he would allow an amendment. What usually happens in these circumstances is they give whoever the senator is a vote on their amendment and subject it to a 60-vote threshold. meaning you have to prove that that could also get past a filibuster. This is uncharted territory right now. We don't know what the waters look like in the Senate to pass the bill and to get 60 votes and potentially twice. But that's why, you know, if they weren't showing some action on this in the House of Representatives right away and waited until next week, because it always takes longer in the Senate, they were going to be right up against that deadline toward the end of next week.
If these freight rails go down, we have a major economic impasse that would come rather quickly at the holidays and go into the next year. So let's talk about what we avoided happening if those rail workers went on strike.
They haven't, you know, closed the door here yet. Okay, so there's a few days left here. But this is why the administration is sending the Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, to Capitol Hill for the Senate Democratic lunch tomorrow. Marty Walsh, the Labor Secretary, is coming alongside him to convince some of those Democratic senators. But, you know, even if you convince all of those senators, even if you get 60, it doesn't take much. You could have one or two senators gum up the entire works and make them, you know, bleed out the process for days. I mean, then you're just dealing with a clock. And what they would have to do is go back and convince the rail lines and the unions and say, look, we've got this worked out. It's just a matter of time. This is going to take till Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that next week. That is entirely possible. We don't know. This universe is just starting to form. I mean, this has come very quickly. You know, we didn't even know that the president was going to meet with those congressional leaders until yesterday morning, about an hour before the meeting. But we saw this literal freight train coming down the track, and here it is, and this has convinced Congress to act.
Congress has gotten involved in this stuff before. You gave us the history lesson just a few moments ago, but there have been a number of instances where the federal government, either the administration or the Congress, has had to step in some very critical areas of our economy to make sure that strikes either ended or didn't happen. Could you give us some of the highlights of history on this? At one point, one president threatened to draft the rail workers into the army.
Well, you know, this was the compromise I talked about in the 1920s and then in the 1930s when they amended the Rail Act. I mean, the talk in the 20s was to federalize the railroads. And that's something they didn't want to do. That was a bridge too far. So this was the compromise to allow Congress to step in and intervene. The more recent example was in the early 1980s, and President Reagan got a lot of flack for this. It also kind of showed his political mettle when he fired the air traffic controllers. Planes did not fall out of the sky. And so it looked like eventually kind of a win for President Reagan. So we've had these types of issues where, you know, you've had federal or congressional oversight or, you know, trying to intercede in some fashion. And this is what they had to do. I mean, it was amazing to me to go back and look at what happened 30 years ago, where you had even people like Ted Kennedy, who was the Democratic senator from Massachusetts, as pro-labor a lawmaker who's ever set foot in the U.S. Capitol, and kind of said we had to do this. And this is, you know, I was amazed there were some pretty conservative House members during the debate on the House floor today. Troy Nels, a Republican of Texas, a freshman, who said, we've got to vote for this. He was talking about what it was going to do economically to constituents and farmers and people in Texas. Texas is a big rail state. That's a big problem. And again, you consider where we are with the economy, the efforts by the Federal Reserve with Jerome Powell to put out the inflation fire. It hasn't worked yet. He just keeps raising interest rates. At some point, you know, some people have said maybe that's the way to, you know, you cure the disease, but you kill the patient. This is why they're very concerned. Maybe in another economic circumstance, not post-COVID, not, you know, in a politically charged atmosphere, they might be able to let this rail strike or something go for a bit. But that was not the case in this environment.
We're speaking with Fox News senior Capitol Hill correspondent Chad Pergram on the efforts of Congress to avoid a strike of freight rail workers. On the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition, we'll have more with Chad straight ahead. They've also gotten involved in baseball strikes, too, which we know is very important to the American psyche, to make sure those ball players
get out. Well, and that's why, you know, that's always been the threat, you know, in respect to baseball. You know, they always hold this sword of Damocles over Major League Baseball that they're going to take away their antitrust exemption. They talk about this all the time. They certainly did during the work stoppage in 1994, the steroid era when they brought in people like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa to a big hearing in 2005. It was on St. Patrick's Day. But they've never actually done something. Baseball is in that special status. I remember President Clinton in 1994, Cecil Fielder, who played for the Tigers, was one of the players' reps going to the White House for a meeting to try to resolve this. And again, you can question the role of commerce in baseball. You know, that was the national pastime. Ultimately, President Clinton was not successful in those efforts. You've always had that role, where the federal government or Congress has tried to get involved from time to time. Not always, but sometimes, as you say, in some very high profile instances. You know, I was just talking with one of my photographers the other day. This ultimately deals with sports and antitrust, but you had President Teddy Roosevelt. He was so concerned about violence in football, and this is back when Harvard and Yale, and I mean, they were the football powers in those days, at the early days of the 20th century, and he considered banning it by executive order. And he had the presidents of the Ivy Leagues come in and actually, they worked it out, and guess what? Football is the biggest thing in town now. So
it still is.
And also does not have an antitrust exemption like Major League Baseball.
Wow. While I have you here, Chad, let's talk about what Congress is going to look like starting in a month and a half or so when the new Congress takes forward. Democrats have picked their new leaders. Nancy Pelosi is out of the big chair, so to speak. And so we have a new Democratic leader who obviously won't be Speaker, but will still lead the party in the House.
Well, there have been some people wondering, and I just came a bit ago from a press conference with Hakeem Jeffries, and he noted that the Democrats have turned over the power temporarily, to the Republicans, kind of suggesting that, if you guys think you can keep it, great. There's also been some suggestion that if Kevin McCarthy, in his effort to become Speaker, if he really kind of screws this up somehow, he does not have the votes, that in some strange scenario, and I'd put the odds at this about 5%, but I would not put it at zero, that Hakeem Jeffries could become Speaker of the House or something. We just don't know. But this is the first minority to be the top leader of a political party. I think it's very interesting that you have the two top leaders in both the House and the Senate being from Brooklyn. I mean, this is like the Beastie Boys here, no sleep till Brooklyn. I mean, and they literally, my mother-in-law lives in Brooklyn, and I actually wanted to see just how close they live. One is in Park Slope, one is in Brooklyn Heights. And in fact, with the new redistricting in New York State, Hakeem Jeffries will be Chuck Schumer's congressman.
Wow.
And Chuck Schumer commented, on the Senate floor today that, he said, you come from Brooklyn, you learn to be tough, you don't back down, it tests your mettle, you also don't take things personally. The Democrats, this is kind of rough and tumble politics, but this comes with a downside for them. You have the two top leaders from Brooklyn. Okay, there's a reason why there are barely any Democrats in the House of Representatives now from Ohio. There used to be several Democratic seats in Indiana. There's not a Democrat anywhere statewide in Congress at the federal level in Iowa for the first time since the late 1950s. Democrats have a middle of the country problem. And, gone are the days that you had, Tom Daschle from South Dakota or something like that. That's a problem for Democrats. At the very least, optically, that you have these two East Coast members. The criticism of Nancy Pelosi was you have the San Francisco liberal. But now it's going to be you got this wokeism from Brooklyn. That's going to be the criticism of Schumer. And how does that speak to middle American voters in Ohio and Iowa and Indiana, these places where you don't have many Democrats left, at least at the federal level? That's going to be a problem for the Democrats. The other problem, and I did ask Hakeem Jeffries this, I mentioned Tom Daschle a couple of moments ago. Tom Daschle became the Democratic leader in the Senate in 1995. And Robert Byrd, the legendary senator, majority leader from West Virginia, he stepped aside from the leadership after about 12 or 13 years in the late 80s. George Mitchell came in between. Democrats lost control of the Senate. George Mitchell retired. And so Tom Daschle was the new leader. And there was an article in the Capitol Hill newspaper, Roll Call, saying that Tom Daschle had a bird problem. And I distinctly remember a couple of big events in the Senate where Robert Byrd pushed his way past Tom Daschle to go down and go toe-to-toe with Bob Dole, who was the Republican leader at the time. And so I asked Hakeem Jeffries, I said, you know, do you have a helicopter parent problem here with Nancy Pelosi still sticking around as a member of Congress? She's not in leadership. Same thing with Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn as well. And he said, it helps to actually have them for their counsel, and we're standing on their shoulders. But we'll see about the helicopter parent factor.
Chad Pergram, our senior correspondent on Capitol Hill, thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.